The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Eagles number 10, Revenge of Eagles. When Falcon McAllister buys a silver mine in the Arizona Territory from his old friend Doc Holliday, he gets more than he bargained for. On the way to inspect the mine, Falcon's stagecoach is robbed and two passengers are killed. One of those passengers is Yaakos Gan, the daughter of Apache Chief Kitano. It falls to Falcon to deliver the Indian princess's body back to her tribe.
Kitano, I must tell you that if you take up the path of war, this time the white man will not stop. His soldiers will kill all of you, not just the warriors, but the women and children as well. Your numbers are small now. When the war is finished, there'll be no Apache left.
I think there is a way to not have war, if you will help. We want you to find the men who killed Yaakos Gan, and kill them.
Well, that I will do with pleasure.
There is something else. When you kill these men, we want you to take their scalps and bring them to us, so that we may see that you have done as you said.
So begins Falcon's quest to avenge the death of Yaakos Gan by bringing down Fargo Ford and his outlaw gang.
You're Falcon McAllister, eh? I thought we killed you.
You thought wrong.
What are you doing here now?
I thought I might have a drink. Spend a little time with a woman. That woman.
Uh-uh. Better pick yourself another one. This one's coming back up with me.
I don't think she wants to do that. And I don't want her to do it either.
What the hell do I care what she wants? She's got no choice. Neither do you, mister. I got my gun in my hand.
Oh yeah, I see the gun. But what are you gonna do with it?
What do you mean, what am I gonna do with it?
Well, here's the thing. You're pointing that gun at a girl. She's not your problem now. I am. If you move it toward me, I'm gonna kill you. If you shoot her, I'm gonna kill you. If you so much as twitch, I'm gonna kill you. In fact, the only way you're gonna get out of this alive is to drop your gun right now.
You're fucking crazy. Your gun's still in your holster. And if you don't get out of here right now, I'm gonna kill this girl.
Prove it.
Add to this lethal mix a band of Apache renegades who decide to take the matter of revenge into their own hands, and you've got a recipe for blazing six-gun action. Don't miss this classic tale of death and vengeance in the Old West, Revenge of Eagles.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Tell me something, Tyra. Why did you take off? What are you running from?
I'm not even sure what I'm running from, Matt, or who, for that matter. What I can tell you is I was assigned to work with the FBI's technology people on the Carnivore system. The Carnivore system is essentially classified to the general public as an internet packet sniffer, but I'm guessing you probably know it's a lot more than that.
I understand the basic concepts of Carnivore. I'm more familiar with the controversy surrounding its invasion of private and confidential data. You think Carnivore poses a threat to the American people?
Anything that has the ability to monitor email transmissions, data transfers, and database searching capabilities could be a tremendous threat if it fell into the wrong hands. If they really wanted to, they could take control of our defense grids, monitor our most sensitive communications, control troop and equipment movements. The possibilities are endless.
Then I guess I've got my work cut out for me.
Al, Eagle's gone missing.
What happened exactly?
Details are sketchy, but it sounds like he went down trying to stop some dudes who tried to snatch McEwen.
Were they locals?
Doesn't sound like it. I'm guessing NIF terrorists dressed as locals, which means they've been following our movements. I know someone had us marked from the start. First we got a hit at the airport, and now this.
If you are thinking about escape, American, you might as well dispense with the notion.
Oh, what?
It's not so funny now. You killed many of my people. I will like watching you die.
Up yours!
Ah, so you are spirited. This is good. I enjoy an American who will fight me, and who will not die so easily. There is more pleasure in it for me.
Funny. I thought you'd be more into little boys. If I get off this wreck alive, I'm gonna kill you.
You apparently enjoy this kind of treatment.
What's your name?
I will tell you nothing!
The door's that way, genius. Get moving.
Let him go, American. Your fight is with me.
Malik, I order you. Step aside and let us pass. There will be another time.
The time is now.
As America's enemies hack into our nation's most top-secret computer networks, Mac Bolan must find their entry point and stop them before it's too late. Executioner number 319, entry point. Find it now on Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously on Doomsday Warrior.
These are the new days. Days of the free fighter. Days of a resurrected America. There are now over 100 free fighting towns or cities in our country.
I nominate Charles Langford for president. God damn it, he deserves it.
This is Deep Red 7. I have a location in the Five Valley region. I will contact soon with exact coordinates. Soon they will all arrive just as we thought. Ready the neutron weapon. Prepare.
This here fella's talking into his donkey stomach. Oh yeah, he was speaking Redsky too.
Damn, I'll have to get out of here. Immediately.
I heard the blast of them Rusky bombs and waited till the mushrooms blowed away. And I went out. Loads of people was dead, fried to a crisp. But I found you, moaning and groaning beneath this here big rock that looked like it was thinking of setting on you for a long spell.
And who might I thank for saving my life?
Folks around here just call me Mountain Man Ed. Mount Ed, for short.
Why have you taken us prisoner?
Not prisoner, friends. We are the people. You call us the Glowers. You are both grievously wounded. You and Kim from the gamma radiation. You will die, unless you cooperate with us.
When you entered Kim's being, you did more than help her. You opened up your telepathic abilities. Roxanne, what you know can be taught to others. Find the star pattern mutants in every free city. We are with you. We are free fighters now.
I'm not seeing anything, Antonov.
Just keep looking, Sharatsky. Our radars picked up human movement around here. Look for any footprints or evidence of their passing.
I really don't see how any Americans could have passed through here. My Geiger counter is off the charts. Are you sure these suits can handle this radiation?
Absolutely, Sharatsky. These suits have been tested to within 12,000 rems. The only thing that could kill us in these things would be...
The Glowers?
Do not spout your urban legend, Sharatsky. Do not lower the standards of the Red Army with your ghost stories.
But this is new reported sight, sir. That would explain the high radiation around here.
Silence! We are to look for evidence pertaining to the whereabouts of Ted Roxon and no more. Am I understood?
Yes, Antonov. Perfectly understood.
Good. Now report in effect. What the hell was that?
Antonov, come quick!
By Dropkin! What is it?
It's some type of black goo. It just seeped up from the ground right now.
Can you determine its composition?
Not with the tools we have, but it's incredibly radioactive. It's measuring 9,000 rems. This puddle in front of us is giving out more radiation than a dirty bomb. I'm getting out of here.
Agreed. I don't want to test our suits against this stuff. Livkin, we are pulling out. Meet us at the appointed pickup spot immediately.
What's going on?
It's another earthquake. Everybody, run!
Who's pouring out of the cracks? We are never going to make it!
Just keep running!
Shoot! I can't keep up, Antonov! I can't...
Doomsday Warrior. Bloody America.
Easy, boy. Nobody make any sudden movements. I think it just wants to get by.
What gives you that idea, Rock?
I don't know, Kim. Just a sense. Ed, you got your blunderbuss ready?
I do.
We'll get ready.
Whoa!
Well, Roxon, you seem to have scared it away.
I don't know, Langford. It was scared, but I don't think it was scared of me. But then what...
Hey, the kitty left its dinner, Rock. Nice young elk. Thing must have just wandered out of here. Look, it barely got its fangs into its head.
And the saber-tooth thing usually goes for the brain first.
Then the heart, then the kidneys. Hope we don't come across that thing that scared up.
Whoa! Pigs?
What the hell's going on? First a saber-toothed lion tiger thing, then three warthogs just run past us?
Beats me. But I think maybe we should join them and start heading in that direction.
Ted Roxon, his girlfriend Kim Langford, her father Charles Langford, newly elected president of the Reunited States of America, and aptly named Mountain Man Ed, started down the path the animals were following. It was a slightly trampled down stretch of bushland, about 10 feet wide, but was turning into a superhighway as a whole new group of animals came flying through the thickets and past them out onto more open terrain. Not one paid the slightest attention to Roxon or the others, their heads down, their legs pumping like locomotives as they shot by.
Hold on, let me check something. Maybe I can hear what they're running from. Shit.
What's wrong?
I know what they're running from. Okay, folks, I don't want to alarm you, but we've got to drop everything and run. There's some sort of flood heading this way. I don't know what, but it's big. Real big.
They started a medium jog in the direction the animals were heading. Roxon could have run twice as fast, but held back with Kim and President Langford, who were still recovering from the radiation burns they had received just a month before. The glower's incredible telepathic healing powers, along with Roxon's own newly found psi abilities, had cured the two of them, pulling the radiation from their bodies. But still, human beings are made of flesh and blood. They had been in deep shock, and Rock wondered how much they could take.
Ed, give me your field glasses.
Here you are, Rock.
Rock, what do you see?
I see a wall of black. It's just a solid mass of black. I can see it peeking over the horizon line, it's so large. I'm guessing it's about 12 miles away and coming fast. Let me see if there's anything around here we can hide on. Ah, there's a small hill to the east, about 2 miles away. Come on, we're running out of time. Let's go.
The four free fighters ran as hard as they could towards the hill. A never-ending rush of animals of all kinds. Foxes, birds, rodents, hounds, cats, other things Roxanne had never even seen before, rushed along with them. A wolf rushed across Roxanne's leg, too scared to even take a bite.
We've got to go faster.
I can't, Brock. I'm usually much stronger than this, but... Brock, leave me. Take Kim and...
Dad!
Kim, can you run?
Yes, I think so. But my father...
Don't worry, I'll carry him.
Brock, I...
Don't worry, Mr. President. I won't let you die. Now, everybody run!
The three of them began running again, faster than before. Kim's mouth was wide open, sucking in air, and even Mount Ed, who Roxanne knew was made of iron, began to look a little weary. But then, he did have over 300 pounds of flesh on him to carry, not to mention his huge sack of supplies and trio of blunderbusses hung over his shoulders. They tore across the increasingly sparse bushland, just black cacti and tumbleweeds occupying the yellowish ground. At last, they reached it.
Made it. Everybody catch your breath. We're heading up in 30 seconds.
Rock laid the president gently at the base of the 75-foot-high hill. Kim and Mount Ed fell against the soft curve of dirt at the base as Roxanne swung the field glasses back behind them. It was a wall of ink stretching across the horizon.
Okay, let's climb.
It wasn't an easy climb, as the sandy, graveled surface fell apart under their scrambling feet. Somehow, they struggled up the side, kicking dirt in one another's faces, moving up 10 feet, sliding down 5. Roxanne, dragging Langford by one arm, was first over the top, and he didn't like what he saw. Just 30 feet away, near the center of the 50-foot-wide plateau at the top of the hill, stood...
Holy shit! Mount Ed! There's something here! Get some of your mini-cannons loaded up. We're gonna need them.
The lizard thing stood up on its hind legs, standing 9 feet in the air. It looked like an oversized Gila monster, but far more dangerous. Its face was a twisted mess of throbbing green arteries, its long clawed hands opening and closing menacingly. Its entire scaly body was iridescent green, with streaks of barely visible red veins occasionally shining through. But it was the rows of serrated teeth that seemed to take up most of its face. Teeth, a good 8 inches long and curved inward, set on jaws that looked as if they could snap a tree in half. Rock stood in front of the president, who lay moaning on the yellowish crest. He moved slowly to the left, wanting to draw the creature's attention away from Langford. He glanced back as Mount Ed's hand came looking for a hold over the loosely packed top.
Careful, Ed. Move slowly. I don't want to spook this thing.
I got the guns ready, Rock. What are you gonna... Holy shit.
Yeah.
The monster slowly dropped into a half-crouch, pulling its long neck down. Its legs bent like springs, ready to pounce. Rock didn't like the posturing at all. The thing was going to strike.
Do you see any weaknesses?
Yeah. Everything's covered in those scales except for right below its chin.
We'll go for that then.
Distract it and I'll take it down.
Got it. Ready?
Yeah. Fire!
The creature leapt, and Roxanne jumped perpendicular to it. He brought the shot pistol to bear, but the thing's tail lashed onto his legs.
Shit! Oh, no you don't!
Hey, your gun, behind you!
The lizard snapped its tail forward and wrapped the end around both of the human prey's legs and pulled. Ed reached for his long hunting blade and had it halfway out when the lizard came in for the kill. Its head snapped out and went straight for Ed's neck.
happened so fast? You bastard. You slimy, ugly bastard.
Roxon walked forward, shot pistol in hand. He made sure the automatic switch was on and just kept walking forward. The creature looked up, its orange eyes locking on its next meal.
Come on, try me, you fucking mutant!
The lizard launched itself forward through the air. Roxon waited until it was 10 feet away and began firing. Resting his elbows on the bloody ground and heaving, Roxon slid out from under the remains. Roxon turned toward the other side of the plateau, not wanting to face what he knew was there. See what he knew he would see. Rox slowly walked over, the empty shotgun pistol dangling like a paralyzed limb at his side. He stood over the American who had saved his life.
You didn't deserve to go this way. I'm sorry, my friend. You saved my life and...
Langford was trying to sit up, his hand over his forehead where he had been cut when Roxon yanked him up over the side. A hand suddenly came over the edge of the hill.
Someone help me up!
Rock rushed over to Kim and reached down, pulling the small blonde daughter of the President of the U.S. up over the edge.
What happened? I heard all that shooting. Is my... Oh, Dad, thank God. I thought...
No, I'm all right, but...
Kim followed her father's eyes to the other side of the clearing.
Oh, my God. Ed! Oh, my God.
It's all right, Kim. He's gone now. No more pain.
The flood of foulest blackness grew closer as screaming animals continued to hurtle by below, flying like arrows shot from a bow, running as they had never run before. Some tried to get up the hill where Rock, Kim, and the President were, but most plummeted back down, their scampering claws or hooves too frantic to get the footholds necessary for the ascent. A few creatures made it to the top, but Roxon didn't fire, letting them take up shelter at the other end of the plateau, where they eyed the humans and each other nervously. Three desert goats, a smallish mountain panther, and two kind of unicorned mountain elk. The creatures scuffled and looked anxiously around, but all the animals seemed content to make a momentary truce with one another in view of the common danger.
Here it comes! Everybody stay close to the ground!
After the initial waves, the flood seemed quite calm, except that it kept rising. At first, it was only about 30 feet above the prairie floor, but gradually the black sea seemed to move up a foot every minute or so. Roxon kept a careful eye on the rising waters, although what they would do if it came over the top, he had no idea. There was nowhere else to go. The sun had long since set, giving the night air and the flood an eerie, translucent quality, everything shining and bobbing. Rock watched the ooze pass and rise through the night, as Kim and Langford caught snatches of fitful sleep. There wasn't much more breathing room before the stuff oozed over the crest of their hill. Roxon could see through the darkness that the river was glowing just beneath the surface. He didn't have his wrist Geiger with him. It had been ripped from him in the neutron blast. But he had seen enough of the atomic death in his life to know it was high rad. Super high rad. Nothing that had fallen in its grasp lived. The bloated carcasses of animals were already floating to the surface, their eyes filled with oily mud, their bodies oozing with every radioactive poison known to man, their hides glowing from the megadoses of the atomic liquid. Through the long night it moved, flowing more slowly as miles behind, the earth at last ceased its violent vomit of the underground sea of poison. The chasm from so many miles back closed up, and the last of the black liquid surged forward. Slowly the tide lowered, sinking once again into the loose soil, but this time dispersed over 2,500 square miles, its power, its radioactivity broken down into less virulent levels. As the sun crested the horizon to the southeast, the waters slowly faded and sank into the burrows and cracks of the land below. The morning sky was laced with a spiderweb of strontium green webs as clouds of radioactive dust circled high above the earth. Soon there was nothing but a slimy deposit of black tar on the prairie floor. The animals who had cowered on the plateau saw it was time to leave, and each did so, taking off in different directions, scampering down the hillside and onto the plains. The ground was smoking slightly, and it burned their feet. But they would survive. They just ran along, happy to be alive.
Kim. Kim, wake up.
Rock?
Wake up, Kim. It's morning. We made it.
Oh. We made it.
Yeah. Most of us. I gotta go do something before we go.
Roxon walked over to the dead mountain man. The free fighters had a prayer that they said over the fallen bodies of their comrades whenever there was time. Whenever they weren't being attacked by MIGs, or black-shirt choppers, or red parakeets, or any of the other things that wanted them all dead. Ted Roxon looked down at the bloody corpse, his head bowed as Langford and Kim stood silently behind him.
Take this man, God, into your heaven, whatever and wherever it may be, and know that this man, Mountain Man Ed, was a good and brave American who gave everything that he had so that others might live. Amen.
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 Okay, folks, we're gonna get going. I know both of you aren't feeling too hot, but we have to leave this place. This land is poisoned, and neither of you are completely recovered from the neutron blast. Even glowers can't fix everything.
They loaded up their remaining supplies, Roxon taking Mount Ed's backpack, and headed back down the hill onto the slightly soggy ground. The ground was hot as the boiling temperature of the water slowly cooled. They walked forward onto a wasteland that seemed to have no end. Everywhere were the remains of death. All that the Black Flood had swept up and destroyed, it had deposited again onto the caked prairie ground. Animals were everywhere, their slime-coated bodies in frozen sculptures of death. They lay bloated, thick as waterlogged wood, as flies began gathering around the rancid corpses. Then the flies slowly dropped and died around the bodies. Behind them, the body of Mount Ed shifted weirdly, the stomach moving in little waves. The eggs of the lizard thing, nearly 20 of them, that the creature had deposited into the human stomach with its killing bite. They ate everything in their path, and when they had consumed their host whole from the inside out, they would hatch. Little green lizard things, a foot long, into a world of unfathomable danger. On the surface of the corpse, ants began crawling. First, just a few, then hordes. Marching in long lines, the eaters of the dead converged, searching for the wounded, the rotting. They covered the cold mountain man with a blanket of moving blackness, a million little mandibles taking their piece of the pie.
Oh, these fucking flies, they're everywhere.
Yeah. The flood left so many corpses behind, they're in a feeding frenzy.
Rock, do we have any shirts in Ed's bag?
Shirts? I think so.
Rock, let's soak them in water. The flies won't be able to get us.
But Kim, we don't have much.
These fucking flies!
Rock, please.
Give me the water.
Rock wetted down a flannel shirt from the pack and handed it to Langford, who covered his head and shoulders.
Thanks, Rock.
Hey, it's working. Rock, now do me.
Here.
Thanks. Is this where it all came from?
I guess so. This chasm was recently opened.
How can you tell?
There's no erosion. The storms around here are bad enough to shear the hair off your face. Just one day of those winds would have polished this gorge flat. Now, there's one spot that's narrower than the rest. It looks to be about 6 feet wide. Can you both make the jump?
I think so.
Well, we don't have much choice, do we?
Nope. Come on, I'll go first. Easy.
Come on, Kim.
Okay.
There you go, Kim. Almost at it.
Oh, shut up, Rock. Come on, Dad.
Okay.
Langford's foot just caught the other side.
Dad!
I've got your hand, Charles. Pull up!
Langford pulled himself out from the gorge's maw.
You made it, President. We're all clear.
Oh, Dad, I was so worried!
Why does everything I touch seem to self-destruct?
Please, sir, don't talk that way. We did everything we could at the convention.
And they blew it up! I wasn't even elected president for 2 minutes and the entire government of the reunited states was destroyed! So here I am, president of nothing!
You're the president of the people, Langford. You're the president of us. I don't know what news has reached the free cities yet, but as soon as we bring you back alive, there'll be celebrations across the land. You bring hope, Charles. You've done more for this country than any other man has for 100 years, because we finally have a leader.
I'll let you do the commanding, Rock, for now, if you don't mind. I'd probably guide us into quicksand or something.
After nearly a day of stumbling across the parched land on the other side of the chasm, they reached higher ground where there began to be a little more life. Wildly colored flowers, shrubs that rose nearly 20 feet into the air. They had gone from an almost dead zone to fertile terrain in just over 15 miles. The three of them looked around in amazement as the lushness of the land grew in leaps and bounds. Here, fruits, pink and red and green, hung down tantalizingly from vines and trees. Fields of rainbow flowers, petals as large as dinner plates, blazing with a glory all their own, slowly closing as the ochre sun beat down from the late afternoon western sky. Kim walked up to a greenish-pink banana-shaped fruit from a stalk.
Ooh, can we?
Yeah, those are all right. I remember eating some like these a few years ago. Didn't die.
That you're all right? You didn't die?
Well, they were a little sour.
Mmm. Well, these are as sweet as sugar. Mmm. These are really good.
The three of them gorged themselves, having not eaten for nearly 2 days. The fresh fruit and leafy-rich vegetables they found growing wild everywhere made them feel much more positive. Even Langford's face seemed to relax and glow with color. Having packed some extra bananas for analysis back at Century City, the three continued walking.
Must have been some farms here once. See how things are growing in their own geometric areas? Mostly squares. There's all pink fruits there, and these green leafy plants here looks like lettuce, I think they used to call it. This must have once been a big farm belt. Probably didn't take any direct hits, just enough rads to kill off the farmers, but not the farms.
Enough radiation to produce some pretty strange breeds, like this one. These tomatoes are big as grapefruits. Now, if we just had some spaghetti, I'd fix us all a real down-home American meal.
They picked as much of the fruit and vegetables as possible so they'd have fresh supplies. Roxon knew this kind of paradise couldn't go on for very long, but he noted their approximate location on his pocket map grid. Back at Century City, agricultural researchers were trying to assemble a nationwide picture of the remaining fertile areas. Someday, large-scale agricultural production would begin again. Someday. They rested for the night under a grove of the fragrant banana trees filled with a small finger-like fruit that was even sweeter than the others. They fell asleep, Rock with his shot pistol in his hand, fingers gripped tightly around it. The night sky was unusually clear, with nary a trace of the strontium clouds high above. The endless galaxies flickered like lights on a shore, signaling the weary travelers' return to peace and safety. Above him, rustling through the trees, Rock could see sets of eyes and little rows of pearly teeth. Suddenly, a face darted close. Monkeys.
What are they, Rock?
Monkeys.
Monkeys? What are they doing in America?
Sisi's got whole books on the things. They came originally from Africa. There must have been some sort of zoo or circus around here once. These things escaped and survived and seem to be doing quite well. They sure can breed.
They don't seem frightened of us.
And they don't really look too eager to attack.
They're actually pretty cute. What do you think, Dad?
Let him rest. He still needs to recover. He didn't get the whole glower treatment like you did.
I'm worried about my dad, Rock.
I know. He'll pull himself out of it. He's a tough man, your father. An inspiration to us all. He'll be remembered as another Lincoln. I know it.
Lincoln struggled with depression his whole life.
Oh, that's not what I...
And then he was shot.
He'll be fine, Kim. Now let's get back to sleep.
They awoke early, just as the blazing blood-red sword of the sun arched up into the black and blue flesh of the dying night. They walked for days, the land slowly changing from fertile to a more desolate terrain, dotted with thorny shrubs and an occasional jackrabbit. The sky became somewhat overcast, which suited Roxanne just fine. As long as the big brown and purple cumulus clouds were hanging up there like boulders about to fall, the Reds would have a hard time using their spy drones, those buzzing pilotless cylinders with nothing but stubby wings and video cameras mounted in the nose and stomach of the metal craft to spy down on the world below them. If the Russians caught them out here in the open. By the fifth day after the Black Flood, Rock knew they were getting near the location of the president's now bombed out ranch where the convention had been held. The land grew more rocky. Small hills were beginning to turn into the very edge of a mountain range.
Do you want to go back to the convention site?
I have to, Rock. Whoever's left there, there must be some who survived. You did. We did. I'll reorganize. There's no other choice. We can't stop this journey of ours. Our trip toward liberation and freedom. There's no turning back. Only one way. Forward.
Well said, Mr. President.
Roxanne smiled and turned to Kim. She blushed and turned away. They marched through the lower hills, and then up onto the higher rocky slopes by the second day. The land was again rich and vibrant here and made them relax. They took in the perfumed scents of wood and sap and life itself. Out there on the wastelands, it was as if they were on an alien planet with something out to get them. But here, this was their land. Tall trees and green everywhere. Wildlife crashing through the thick forests, all in harmonious symbiosis. They were just coming over a rise above a narrow wooded valley as the sun sank into the cloud-covered pit of night.
Hold up.
What is it?
I smell smoke just ahead. Stay here. Get behind those bushes over there. I'll go check it out.
He edged forward cautiously, his shot pistol in his right hand, and rolled quickly over the top of the rise and down a few feet behind a grove of thorn bushes.
Venison?
He knew it couldn't be Reds. The Russians would never be camping out in the wild. They feared the radioactive lands, but he had encountered enough bandits to know that just being Americans didn't guarantee safety from strangers. He slid down the hill at the north side of the 200-foot-deep valley, darting from shadow to shadow.
No, it couldn't be.
He moved down the slope and pushed aside the side of a brown spiked bush. Four men sat around a fire on pieces of a fallen tree. One of them, a large Scot, was cooking over low flames. It was McCaughlin and Rock's team, along with Ms. Goldman. A sardonic smile passed over Roxon's face.
All right, boys, don't shoot me now. I'm here to surrender.
They looked up, startled at the sound of the voice. Then their eyes lit up like Christmas bulbs on the trees of their ruddy faces.
Holy shit, as I live and breathe!
Mr. Roxanne!
They just sat there, looking up, their jaws hanging open as if dumbstruck. McCaughlin, Archer, and even Chen couldn't make a sound.
Yep, it's me. Glad to see you all too.
How the fuck did you... But you... Did anybody else?
It's a long story, Detroit. I'll tell you all later. And you... I was sure you all were a group of charcoal statues I found.
We saw them too. In fact, when we scoured these hills, we found scores of them.
I know, Chen. They got a lot of us that day.
Rock turned to Archer. The huge near-mute was smiling with a grin as broad as his watermelon-sized face. He cradled his immense steel crossbow in one arm and squeezed Roxon around the shoulder with the other, almost lifting him off the ground. At 7 feet plus and at least 400 pounds, although no one had really ever been able to weigh him, the man had the strength of a grizzly bear.
Yeah, he likes you, Rock. He was sure looking blue in the face when we all thought you ate it. We were all thinking of electing a new team leader. But we all just looked at each other and said, no way.
Ugh, just wasn't the same without you, Rock. Kind of like steaks without no steak sauce.
I'm touched, McCoughlin.
Hello?
Oh, of course. It's all right, Kim. Langford, you can come up.
Kim and Langford walked out of cover and towards the fire. The men all saluted with respect. They had been at the Reconstitutional Convention as well, and knew who Charles Langford was. They stood at attention. They were all free fighters, and as such, part of the newly formulated United States Army.
President Langford, I'm so glad to see you alive.
Please, please. No need to stand. Sit down, y'all. No formalities out here. It seems ridiculous.
Here, sir. Sit down on that log over there. We have food ready.
Good, good. Now, what's for dinner?
No! 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 No!
There's no escape this time, pig.
You!
Yes, pig. Me, Kilov. And I've brought some friends. Did the pig fall? What's that on your shirt?
It's blood! There's blood everywhere!
Yes, the blood of those you have killed, of those you have let die. It's all coming back. And they are too. Yes, yes. Eat the pig.
No! 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 A dream. Go back to bed. Good enough. I need a drink.
Here you are, Mr. President.
Thank you. Triple bourbon. You know just what I like.
Yes, sir. Did you have the dream again?
Yes. Yes. What am I to be afraid of? Kilov will fall, and soon. I am sure of it. Because Vasily himself... but what am I talking to a lowly servant for? You are not to say a single word of what has transpired, or else...
Of course, Mr. President.
Now, be gone with you. I have business to attend to here.
Yes, sir.
Now, where were we, my sweet? Yes, exactly.
In Moscow, Premier Vasily, the grandfather, ruler of all the world, sat in his wheelchair on a marble terrace overlooking Red Square. Below him, crowds filed past, petty functionaries and conscripted soldiers. They trudged through the snow as more flakes licked down from the turgid sky, thick with undulating Arctic clouds. In Vasily's withered hands was The Phenomenology of Mind by Hegel.
Do you think, Rahal, that Hegel had any idea of what he was starting?
Grandfather?
Hegel let out an entire system of metaphysics, ethics, and political philosophy. These ideas led to Karl Marx writing Das Kapital and the Communist Manifesto. These books shook the world and still move it today. From Marx to Lenin, Trotsky, Stalin, and all the way up to me. an unbroken line of leaders who have carried out these ideas with a vengeance. But there are problems these days, no? There have always been problems, but now I can see our grip on the world slipping away.
Every day brought more disquieting reports of rebellion, crop failures, sabotage, attacks on his forces. Years before, they had all just been skirmishes, guerrilla attacks, or cowardly acts of vandalism. But now the people were growing dissatisfied with their lot, and bolder. They had been promised freedom and autonomy. But the Soviet Empire needed more and more of the raw materials and the few goods that these subjugated countries could produce. Mother Russia's agricultural system had deteriorated to the point where it only supplied about a third of Russia's needs. Everything had to be imported, sometimes by force. Even the Russian factory system had fallen apart. Little was being produced anymore, other than military equipment and ammunition. Only the immense satellite and ICBM control complex on the outskirts of Moscow was kept at peak efficiency. A budget of nearly 2 billion rubles a year was required just to keep the huge military installation from falling apart. Two 50-story buildings sat on each side of a steel magnesium plastic-coated dome nearly 800 feet high. It controlled the spy sats, the killer sats, and the guidance system for the armada of remaining red missiles. An ace in the hole, in case the rebels around the world got the upper hand. Not that Premier Vasily wanted to use them. The fallout had almost destroyed the planet. Vast deserts now stood where fields of crops had once danced in the clear sun. Plains had turned into jungle. Land masses had fallen into the sea. And microclimates made irrigation and crop rotation exercises in futility. Half of southern Asia was no longer under Vasily's fist. The warlords there, Asians and rebellious Russian army officers, had created their own little fiefdoms, where they ruled with even more of an iron fist than the regular army. China was on fire, under the control of the fanatical Muabir, the flame of Allah. His armies of horse-riding religious zealots were only too willing to die to reach paradise. They attacked entire Russian convoys, losing thousands of their men in the process, but causing increasing damage as they armed themselves with stolen rifles and even heavy artillery. Indochina was exploding in a renewal of Buddhism as monks burned themselves and roused their people to rebellion. How could you kill people who killed themselves? How could you enslave people's spirits when they knew their bodies were transitory? And America. That was the worst of all. The free fighters, as they called themselves, were growing bolder by the day, and now they apparently possessed some new secret weapon that had incinerated entire convoys. His scientists couldn't even discover what the technology behind the weapon was. They now knew the American fighters were far more advanced than either Kilov or Zhabnov realized. And Kilov himself, ready to battle it out with Vasily for control of the world. It was all too much. Somehow, he had to make a move. If only he could make peace with some of the rebel rulers in each country, buy them off, or even make concessions.
Oh, my head.
Sir? I have your brandy and some of the painkillers that seemed to help last week.
Ah, thank you, my friend. You are always here when I need you. I know I can trust you, my only friend.
Rahala stood still, resplendent in his stiffly creased white tuxedo and white gloves. Attentive. His strong sculpted face with high cheekbones reflected the setting sun's greenish rays as they pierced the twisting storm clouds overhead. His eyes seemed endlessly deep as they stared far off past the horizon.
What? What do you think about? Beneath that calm exterior, what goes on in that mind of yours? I know you're a smart man, probably more intelligent than my entire staff.
I think only of how I can serve you, sir. I've been with you for many years, and I've come to know you for what you are, a good man, trapped by the needs of history. You've done well as you can with what you have.
But don't you ever grow afraid?
angry, vengeful. After all, your people are still subjects. Work hard, die young.
Sir, you have promised me that someday my people will be free. My tribe has learned to be patient, to move with the changing seasons. I have been given the opportunity by the gods to come and work for you, influence you. I speak to you of peace, always. Peace for the world, for all mankind, so that we may return to the paradise that this green planet once was. That is my anger, my vengeance, to influence you, sir, to carve peace.
Peace. If only it were so easy. I know I promised you freedom for your tribe. I wish things were calmer. I've been waiting until the Empire was firmly in control before I gave more power to my subjects. In the midst of revolts is not the time to give in. It is a bad sign. They would be emboldened. I'm sorry, Rahala. It is not yet time.
I know you will do what is right.
Ah, I feel tired tonight, Rahala. So tired. I'm growing old. There is still much to do. I must leave the planet a safer place, not more dangerous. But I fear that is what is happening. With this madman Kilov making his bid for power, I am the only one who can stop him. My fat fool of a nephew, Zhabnov, is incapable of fighting the cleverness of this skull.
You are still strong, sir. I know your time has not yet come. I have spoken with the spirits of my ancestors. They have never failed me, never lied to me. Death knocks, but cannot break down the wall to your soul. It is my duty to give you what comforts a man, to calm your mind and heart so that you can better deal with the battles of your rule.
Thank you, Rahala. Your words always give me comfort. Wheel me in now. I grow cold.
The black servant, descended from a warrior race, slowly pushed the wheelchair of the ruler of all the worlds, a frail old man who hardly weighed more than a child. In his mind flashed images of Colonel Kilov and the myriad ways in which he could be killed. May they all come to fruition.
I know you're out there, Axon, and I will find you. I will take my revenge on you for giving me this scar, for making a fool of me. I was a fool to try and kill you so quickly before. With a neutron bomb, your death will take days, weeks, months. You will scream and beg and cry for the pain to stop, and when your death comes, you will thank my benevolence. But first things first, Zhabnov. These dolls, Zhabnov, represent you and Vasily. I have been studying them and cursing them. Your attempts on my life have failed. Your spies have been killed. No one is to enter this room without passing through my X-ray machine, metal detector, and elemental spectrometer. Do you hear that? No one can touch me. You cannot touch me! You didn't have the guts to take me by official means, did you? You feared the backlash, that you would be seen as weak. And so you went to the grandfather for help. Your cards are all on the table. You probably think you have me cornered, that you have me now with your combined forces. But my plots are already in motion, and they are farther than you will ever know. Your day, Zhabnov, will come. And when it does, I will rule. It is my destiny.
Jesus, Rock! Look!
What is it, McCoughlin?
The clouds! They're huge!
HP supercells, I believe. Very large amounts of rain, Roxon. And they're coming this way.
No, not the clouds. Are y'all daft? Look, the dots.
Oh, shit.
What are they?
Choppers, coming this way. The Reds must still be searching for any survivors of the convention. We need to find cover. What? What? Damn it, Archer, at least point.
There! Came!
He's right, Rock. I see it. A couple of hundred yards down a hill.
Right, double time.
Let us pray that the cave is uninhabited.
We'll deal with it when we get there, Chen. Right. They're just bats in here. Everybody, defensive alignment.
McCoughlin pulled out the folding 50mm machine gun from its satchel and moved it up to a low rock just inside the cave. Chen took 8 of his exploding star knives from a hidden pouch inside his black ninja suit, fitting 4 into each hand. Detroit tightened his grenade bandoliers that crisscrossed his linebacker-sized chest, taking off 2 of the metal pineapples. Archer loaded his crossbow with an exploding arrow as he fit 5 more into the quick-fire mechanism that he had built in just below the stock. The team nodded to each other. It was good to be together again.
Detroit, pass me the field glasses.
Here you go.
Shit. There's nearly 20 of them. V formation, MS-20s. They're coming straight for us. Some overzealous asshole aboard one of them probably spotted us. At least they're just Red Army, not KGB.
Roxanne glanced over at Langford and the alabaster-skinned Kim. She looked back at him with her big green eyes, wide in fear and concern. For a moment, he regretted his decision.
We can take him, Rock. Let me open up the 55. If we can get just a few of the lead choppers, the rest will pile up and...
Not this time. There's too much at stake here. If President Langford should get captured, it would set our new government back for years, maybe decades. We've got to create a diversion. They know there's someone here, but I'm sure they don't know how many or who. I'm gonna be that diversion. It's our only chance, and I need someone with me. Someone noticeable.
Archer, come, Rock.
Thank you.
Rock, no! You can't go out there!
I'm not ready to die yet.
But we've only
I'll see you soon, Kim, I promise. Take care of your dad while I'm gone. Archer and I will make sure they see us. There's some woods down at the bottom of the far side of the mountain. If we can just get inside, I'm sure we can lose them. Don't give away your position. Don't do a thing unless the bastards are actually coming into the cave. Get to the very back. If the Reds look in here and see nothing, they probably won't even want to search. Too much work for them. Detroit, give me some of your grenades. Maybe we can do some jamming ourselves.
Here you go, Rock. Make me proud.
Be safe, Mr. Roxanne.
Kill! Rock and Archer, kill!
Damn, Archer, that was almost a speech.
Take care. Let's go.
Rock started forward with the giant at his side. He didn't look back. Kim, her eyes misting over, reached forward with outstretched arms and then quickly pulled them back, realizing how absurd the gesture was. The Rock team and Ms. Goldman pulled back into the innards of the cavern, lying on their stomachs behind a small drop in the cave floor. The free fighters lay stock still, their weapons ready. The President and Kim were at the very edge of the back wall. The men would give their lives to protect them. Out on the steep rocky slope, the Doomsday Warrior and Archer began flying downhill. Rock knew there was no way the Red Choppers could miss a man as big as a goddamn ox. Archer took huge flying steps, landing every 10 feet or so, while Rock took shorter, more fluid steps, hardly sinking into the soft, pebbly slope before jumping again. The choppers came in from the eastern sky like a swarm of hawks.
Look, Faryat, I want to see what we have here. Rodienko, switch off the jets. Don Wilinski. Speed dropping to 50 kph. The new kinetic scanner has already paid for itself.
I agree. Our new ability to detect specified kinetic energy from over 6 miles away will ensure that no American rebels escape the Red Army again.
Shit. Lead them. Wait for it. Now!
Rock swung his arm like a discus thrower. The grenade soared into the sky straight up the mountainside. Archer sighted on a lead chopper and fired a 3-foot-long steel shaft with a small charge of explosive plastique mounted on the tip. The free fighters' weapons made contact with the fleet at the same instant.
Rock, Archer killed.
Yeah, now run! Head for the trees! Shit, they're covering our exit.
The pilot of the closest chopper saw the grenade flying toward him and twisted the metal bird to the right and up, trying to dodge the explosion. The grenade flew up just below the belly of the soaring red chopper and went off. The choppers behind it flew forward.
Now's our chance! Go, go, go!
Rock and Archer zipped between the dark trees, ducking their heads beneath low branches. Rock couldn't help but smile, even in the midst of fleeing the Reds. He had already taken out nearly a quarter of the fleet, and the Russians hadn't bothered to stop and check out the cave.
Hey, they're just tossing grenades, hoping to rouse us. We've got to find better cover!
Archer had caught a branch right in the face as he had turned to catch sight of the explosion lighting up the woods behind them. Rock stopped and reached a hand down for the immense man in his oversized fatigues that were always ripping at the seams. Archer opened his eyes and saw Roxon looking down. He instantly realized how stupid he looked and smiled.
Come on, big fellow. It happens to the best of us. Now come on, let's get to the mountains. There's no way they'll find us there.
The two of them once again hit cruising speed into the lengthening shadows as the sun began to fall lazily from the ocean blue sky. Ahead was a clearing, lit up with golden light from the warm rays of Old Sol. It looked all right. Roxon stopped at the edge of the woods. There were about 100 yards of lilies and daisies until the next patch of woods. The Reds seemed to be far behind them, still trying to flush them out.
Come on, fast! What's that sound? It's a net!
A large rope net dropped down from the trees. The net hit Archer, tangling his arms, then his legs. Rock felt the net fall over his back, and he shot forward, wriggling, avoiding entanglement. He reached the edge of it and came to his knees, pulling his 12-gauge shot pistol up, ready to spit death.
Please, don't try that.
Rock looked up. A Russian captain with a big red star on his brown cap was aiming a 9mm special service revolver right between Rock's blue and violet eyes. On each side of the officer were nearly 10 regulars, their Kalashnikovs pointed at the crouching American. Rock shrugged and let his pistol dangle from his fingers. He stood up slowly as troops tied the net around the furiously struggling Archer.
Well, now I may be mistaken, but this looks like the notorious Ted Roxon, the ultimate American. I've seen your picture enough on every brown wall in every military headquarters in this filthy country. You don't look so tough right now. Hold out your hands. Hold out your...
And if I don't?
We will shoot your bear of a friend. He is no use to us. You are the real prize.
I'll remember your face.
Everyone will, Roxon. I am the man who captured the hope of America. This is Captain Suvorov. Land the chopper. Looks like your fighting days are over, Roxon. After Intel gets hold of you and puts you in one of those mind breakers, you'll be lucky if you can hold your bladder.
Oh yes, the mind breaker. I've heard of that. Quite a lot of fun, I hear. Worked out real well for you guys in Pavlov City.
Half a mile behind them, in the dusk of the now set sun, Kim, the president, and the free fighters slipped unnoticed down the backside of the mountain. Three choppers still burned, just down the forward slope. Rock had done his job. God help him now.